You're listening to the WFYI Weekly News Podcast for the week of October 19th through 23rd, 2015. I'm Christopher Ayers. This week, we set up the race for mayor of Indianapolis.
The fact that a lot of people do have confidence in his candidacy, I think, would benefit him.
The Indianapolis Public School Board contemplates significant changes.
So you almost need like a map to kind of figure out what they're doing.
And what to do about a drop in licensed teachers. Those stories are coming up. Please stay tuned. The Indianapolis Public School Board will vote next week on a number of changes that include potentially closing a downtown school, as well as expanding a popular magnet program to a fourth location. This week, I spoke with education reporter Eric Weddle about what all the changes could mean. So, Eric, the Indianapolis Public School Board set to vote on a plan next week that would make a couple of big changes throughout the district. It would include closing one school and adding what's proven to be a pretty successful curriculum to a fourth district school. So could you, in some broad strokes, lay out exactly what district administrators are proposing?
So you almost need like a map to kind of figure out what they're doing. But one of them is they want to close down the Key Learning Community, which is downtown. They want to end that program, keep that building. And then they want to take the Arts Magnet program at School 70 on the city's north side and move that to the Key Learning Community. At the same time, they want to kind of scale back on Broad Ripple High School and remove the middle school, which is part of the high school's Art Magnet program, and then put that downtown in the current Key Learning Community building. All of this leaves School 70 on the north side open for them to create a fourth Center for Inquiry school and put it in that building.
Okay, so that's sort of a lot to unpack here. So let's start with Key Learning Center. It's a school that's been around since 1987, a school that's had a lot of success in the past, but not so much recently. So what's gone into the decision to potentially close it?
Sure. Well, you know, enrollment there has been stable, but there's been the thought from many in the school that it's just kind of not living up to what the original intent was. Some of the grades of the school have been going back. They were an F school a few years ago. Right now they're a C. The principal that was brought in to kind of help turn the school around is no longer there. So I think they're kind of thinking program has run its course. There is a member on the board who wants it to see it continue, and maybe there's a possibility further on, if staff there who are dedicated to this program there could maybe reopen it somewhere else. But I think right now there seems to be a lot of movement from the board and from the school that maybe the program should be over.
Okay, so another big part of this plan involves adding a fourth Center for Inquiry school to the already three that exist within IPS. This one would be on the north side, which there's quite a high demand for, it seems. So what does this mean for families with students on the waiting list for the other CFI schools?
Right. So CFI is a magnet school, which means you have to apply to get into it. And the school is based on the International Baccalaureate World School Program. So it's a certified program. And two of the schools out of the three that currently exist are seen as kind of the top in the district. So a lot of people want to get in there. Right now, there's about 300 people on the waiting list. What this new school would do, they would actually open it up to the city, and there'd be about 500 spots available, and then these 300 people on the wait list could then go into that school, and then there'd be more spots open for additional families to get into.
Okay, so speaking of magnet schools, so the last thing I want to touch on is about this other plan proposed by the IPS administrators, which would tighten up the criteria for admission into the, into the district's magnet schools. So what would that change do exactly?
Sure. So I think right now a lot of families find frustration every year when they apply for these magnet programs. And even the district will say that maybe they haven't done the best in terms of explaining the process to the families. And it seems that maybe some families have been able to get in because they know the principal or because there's been a little bit of wiggle room. If you apply for the school, they're going to look at some things such as if you have a sibling in the school, where you live, near the school, and also how long you've maybe have been on a wait list. So they want to kind of set these parameters. There's some disagreements on the board still what they could be, but I think the board thinks and the district thinks it would be one way to kind of give families more transparency.
So what do you think the odds are of these proposals passing?
Well, the board discussed this week at a work session. It was a very long meeting, but there wasn't much disagreement from the members. But I think it'll be interesting to see next week when they meet who comes out from the community.
All right. So thank you, Eric. A lot of important stuff here, and we appreciate you keeping us up on it.
Thanks, Chris.
For more details on proposed changes within IPS, go to WFYI.org/news and click on the Education tab. This year's race for mayor of Indianapolis is the first to not feature an incumbent mayor since 1999. And in this year's open election, a moderate Democrat and former federal prosecutor is taking on a progressive Republican seeking elected office for the first time. 90.1 WFYI's Ryan Delaney sets up the race.
Joe Hogsett arrived at an anti-violence march on the Far East Side and made his presence known.
Sorry I'm late.
The Democratic candidate for mayor shook hands, doled out hugs, and smiled wide for photographs. Hogsett's adversary, Republican Chuck Brewer, was at the Community Day events, too. He arrived later. He greeted guests and chatted with people staffing booths. But unlike Hogsett, he didn't mug for the camera or give a speech. This was friendly territory for Hogsett, but it also shows something about the difference in the personalities of the two men seeking to replace Republican Mayor Greg Ballard, who is retiring after two terms.
Thanks for taking the time, sir. All right, you bet. It's my pleasure. Thanks for
working a room doesn't seem like it comes quite as naturally for Brewer yet, lacking the polish of a more experienced politician. And he's not. This is his first campaign. He told WFYI he hadn't planned to run for mayor, but had his eye on the city council.
But I stepped up into the role because I feel really strongly that we need a good leader that is not political and doesn't bring politics into managing the city.
Brewer, who's 43, moved to Indianapolis to open a Potbelly sandwich shop on Monument Circle. He soon after opened a soup shop around the corner. Before getting into business, Brewer served 23 years in the Marine Corps, which included two tours in Iraq. His lack of experience running for elected office is the opposite of his opponent's background. Hogsett, who's 58, stepped down from his appointed role as a U.S. attorney last year to run for mayor. A Democrat, he was Indiana Secretary of State for the first half of the 1990s. He then ran unsuccessfully for the U.S. Senate and House, as well as for State Attorney General. Hogsett told WFYI's No Limits that he learned a lot from all those defeats.
The most amazing thing happens to you when that occurs. The sun comes up the next day. And life goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And all too often in today's political climate, I think we have people who are so concerned about winning or losing the next election that they become captive.
Few expect this race for mayor to be another defeat for Hogsett. He's been the assumed winner for months. His name recognition and fundraising far outpaced Brewer, and he flooded the airwaves with television ads early.
I'm Joe Hogsett, and I'm running for mayor because I know what it's like for a family to struggle. In the days ahead,
Hogsett often quotes scripture in his campaign speeches, bringing an air of reverence to his candidacy. But Brewer has countered the notion that Hogsett is the clear winner by sometimes ending his speeches with a slight dig at his opponent.
There are two kinds of people that run for political office. There are people that just desperately want to be somebody, and they will run for any office they can. And there are people that just want to do great things.
But that's about as negative as this race has been. A political cartoon even depicted the two candidates, both saying, "I agree with him," at the same time. The campaign has been civil and substance-driven. Paul Helmke directs a civic leadership center at IU Bloomington, and he's a former Republican mayor of Fort Wayne. Helmke points out that 8 years ago, Ballard was a huge underdog trying to unseat Mayor Bart Peterson.
You can't assume that the money and the television advertising is going to determine who the winner is. There's stuff that goes on under the radar that oftentimes can change the outcome.
The lopsided presumptions and civil sparring could depress voter turnout November 3rd, and Indiana already struggles with high voter apathy. University of Indianapolis political scientist Laura Mansfield Albright says a lack of difference between the candidates could keep voters home.
I can't see it really hurting Hogsett, because even if there are a few people that turn out, the fact that a lot of people do have confidence in his candidacy, I think, would benefit him.
But Hogsett will still have to knock off Brewer, a moderate Republican in a moderate city, to become the next mayor. For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Ryan Delaney.
According to the State Department of Education, Indiana has seen more than a 30% drop in the number of people licensed as first-time teachers. But what's still a bit blurry is what Hoosier policymakers plan to do about the problem. As State Impact Indiana's Rachel Morello reports, it could take more time than most people expect to see some results, and even longer to see sustained change.
On one hand, policymakers seem to be making some real strides in narrowing down potential solutions to Indiana's teacher shortage. The Blue Ribbon Commission, a group of about 50 educators from across Indiana, headed by State Superintendent Glenda Ritz, has been meeting for a month now, and they've begun to identify existing strategies that Ritz says could be implemented in other areas of the state.
What's been your favorite idea?
Let me think. My favorite idea. One of them was from Butler University that was called Tapping.
We just basically created what we call a tapping card. We said, you know of great students, you know of great colleagues in your building who would benefit from graduate work here. Send us their name and we will reach out to them.
That's Angela Lupton, Assistant Dean of Butler University's School of Education.
I think there's something very powerful about somebody saying to you, I think you would be great at this. And sometimes students don't even potentially see themselves as teachers unless someone points that out to them.
This solution has been echoed by many people, along with a laundry list of other likable, doable, popular ideas.
A differentiated pay model.
Mentorship or residency is very important.
I think the universities should partner with the state and have a marketing campaign.
It's always good to have options, but that's also part of the problem. So many possibilities and not a lot of time. The key word for Ritz is systematic.
We're just working on the system. What's already in place? What do we need to add? We want to have quality teachers in our classrooms. What does that look like from recruiting efforts to pre-service efforts to mentoring while in the classroom to compensation to working conditions?
And that's why lawmakers are taking their time committing to any specific idea. Indianapolis Representative Bob Boehning heads the General Assembly's Interim Study Committee on Education, which held a marathon 8-hour meeting this week to gather input and talk about proposed fixes. Still, they're waiting another week to take any steps forward.
I don't think any of us have all the answers. I don't think we even have all the data we need to make logical suggestions as to what the problem is and how we're going to fix it. But I think there are some things that we can probably tweak with.
And some teachers find this process frustrating. Dee Emmons teaches high school in Howard County. She waited through the entire study committee meeting Monday. Many of her colleagues had to leave before getting their chance to speak. And Emmons says those voices are critical to include in the conversation.
I think that if you're going to do a study about an issue, that you probably would be well advised to talk to the people that it affects and that work under the conditions that are being studied. Any kind of input from the people that it affects, the K-12 people, I think, would be beneficial at any time.
Even though many of the official policymaking groups aim to have recommendations ready for the start of the legislative session in January, Lupton says this is not something that will be fixed overnight. And there will be time for other people to join the discussion.
Long-term change in education never happens within an election cycle. Teacher shortage is maybe the issue of the day right now, and it's certainly something that we need to address. But what we really need to think about is the collective good of the teaching profession. We've got to do a lot of small things in order to make sure that for generations to come, teaching is viewed by both the external and the internal groups as the important profession that it is.
Lupton meets with fellow members of the Blue Ribbon Commission to begin drafting a legislative agenda on November 16th and again on December 7th. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Rachel Morello.
That's it for this edition of the WFYI Weekly News Podcast. You can follow us online at WFYI.org, on Twitter at WFYI News, and on Facebook, WFYI. This has been a production of WFYI News, produced at 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Studios in Indianapolis. I'm Christopher Ayers. Thanks for listening.